It's March 23rd, Masoret. We're doing some areas of the Haggadah. Specifically, the part of the Haggadah called Dayenu. Dayenu lists a bunch of things that happened to us. It sort of breaks it down into its components. All of the major happenings that occurred to us, that we've been reading about. And sets aside each one by itself and sort of says, had God only done that for us, it would have been enough for us. And then it goes on to the next thing, it would have been enough for us. So the question, of course, is what's the idea behind this? And let's go through some of the specific ones to try and understand what it's highlighting as being the benefit. Now, as a general introduction to Dayenu, to the general concept of Dayenu, that obviously a major aspect of the evening is to tell the story, but it's not just telling a story. The telling of the story is for a certain objective. That is, ultimately, a person has to be able to relate it to himself. And that's part of the idea, that he has to see it as though he himself was a slave in Egypt and that he was redeemed. So that expresses itself in certain concrete ways. Of course, he has to demonstrate freedom, but he also has to praise. That's a very, very important element of the evening, Hallel, to give Shevach, to give praise and Hodiah and thanksgiving, and it culminates in the recitation of Hallel. Now, the idea of Dayenu is connected to the concept of Shevach. And it means, I would say, that there's a certain tendency in man which is contrary to the true idea of thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is a vital component of human perfection, because it's the reality that the person lives in, that he's a beneficiary, that he's not responsible for anything. He's not responsible for his own existence. He's not responsible for his own sustenance, except in a very minimalistic way. So he has to be cognizant of that, and he has to give praise to the Creator. Now, when a person gives praise, generally speaking, he does so in a begrudging way, because there's a conflict, there's an ambivalence. Part of him doesn't want to give praise, because he doesn't want his own pride, his own narcissism. He doesn't want to acknowledge what somebody else has done. The more someone else has done, the less capable he is. It's focusing on a person's weakness. So generally, when people, you'll notice that there is a tendency of some people to sort of give a general thanks, appreciate all you did for me, that kind of thing. But they sort of downplay. You'll see that, I mean, in personal situations, that they may thank you for a favor, but they don't, that's just a part of human existence, that other people don't really recognize everything you had to do. That you went out, you had to get shopping, you had to buy this, you had to do that, you know, all the different particulars that you did, that you went out of your way for someone. So that's the way it is. Some people are more sensitive. Others are less sensitive, less thankful. But it's teaching us over here that when we give thanks to Hashem, we have to recognize all of the particulars, instead of just saying, well, thanks for taking us out of Egypt. Because there were more, in the course of taking us out of Egypt, there were many other things that were done that we need to be cognizant of. So that's the first idea. Now, I would say that the listing of the particular manifestations of divine providence in this situation are important for two reasons. One, in terms of our thankfulness to Hashem. So there's two reasons. One is the personal reason, that a person should be appreciative of every nace. That's vital. Secondly, I would say there's another dimension, and that is it enables us to study the Hashkach of Hashem. That's very, very important. Equally important. it's not just so that we can say thank you for this, thank you for that. But to once you do that, you think into it, and you gain new insights in many ways, because that's a separate objective to study what takes place over here. That's why there's such a focus in the Haggadah about that. I think this would help a little bit. I mean, one of the most difficult parts of the Haggadah is when that section where they go into how many changes, how many miracles occurred here, how many miracles occurred there. That's very, very difficult because, you know, it's hard to provide any explanation what they're really talking about. But I think in a general sense, it is connected to what we're saying. And that is that that the miracles that occur are tremendous opportunities for us to study the manifestations of divine providence and learn from it. So you see, that's what they were engaged in. Even if I don't know exactly what the calculations were, but why were they so... What difference does it make? If there were 5 miracles here, if there were 20 miracles, all these calculations, what difference does it make? Why not just be happy? I mean, there was a miracle, though, as far as we're concerned, the end result. You see that they're not just interested in the end result, because they realize that this is manifestations of Hashkacha, of divine providence. And thus, it behooves us to study it and see what we can learn from it. For starters, for purposes of illustration on how to approach it, I'm not going to start at the very beginning. Now, if you go through the Dayenus, it starts off by saying, had God just taken us out of Egypt and not enacted judgments, punishments against them, that would have been enough for us. That basically, that's three. Well, it's the next two. You have the Shvatim. Then it mentions that the God did Shvatim against their gods. Hashem did against their idols. That's the second one. And then you had the fact that God killed their firstborn. Now, of course, right away you could ask the question, well, why? That's the manner. See, at that point in time, you have a very good question. That why do I care? Why am I thankful that God killed the firstborn? That happens to be the means by which they were broken down. But that's not the point over here, because we're already giving thanks for the fact that we were taken out. So why are you mentioning this particular makkah, the killing of the firstborn? That seems to be an additional benefit, that God killed the firstborn. But why are we giving special praise for that? Is that something that we're happy about? Is that a gift to it? It's being presented as though God did that for us. And the question is, what do you mean God did it for us? Are we supposed to be happy about that? Now, why did God do it? It was necessary. Whatever, they were deserving of it and so forth. We have already mentioned that God enacted judgments against them, that God punished them. Okay, so let's assume that that's something we should be happy about. Okay, fine. But where does this fit into the picture? That is, that had God destroyed their idols and had not destroyed their firstborn, that would have been enough. And you have to complete the thought. And the thought is, well, but in addition, God killed their firstborn. So that's great. But why is that great? Why are we so happy about that? It seems as though we're rejoicing at the fact that God killed their firstborn. Like that's a boon to us. Well, we could start at this point. Let's go back then to the first one. The first of the three. That had God taken us out of Egypt and not enacted judgments against them, it would have been sufficient for us. So what are we praising and what are we learning? Well, why is that? What it's basically saying is that God could have removed us from Egypt. And It could have been without any enacting of judgments against them. God could have worked it out that let's say you have the choshech, the darkness. It could have been anything, where the Egyptians were completely paralyzed, and during that time the Jews left, but nobody got hurt. However, God wanted to work it out. It could have been done that we got our freedom. And the Egyptians would not have been harmed. That's, I think, what he's saying. So that would have been sufficient. But no, punishments were enacted against the Egyptians. So why is that so important? Why are we so happy that punishments were enacted against the Egyptians? Today's mentality, I mean, the way people look at it today, where there's a tremendous reluctance against this concept of punishment. People don't like the idea of punishment. It's very unpopular. So that, because punishment presupposes that there's such a thing as the right way. And it also presupposes that the person who's acting wrongfully is responsible, is guilty. So, the Haggadah, however, has a different philosophy. That is that it's a good thing. It's a good thing that God enacted judgments against them, because it reveals the dimension of reward and punishment. That's something that needs to be reinforced, because people are always questioning that. So that idea that I would say most of these dayenus, the benefit that we're talking about is twofold. One benefit is objective, and even if it wasn't you personally, that is, if you were a neutral outsider and you had access, you witnessed what was going on, and you saw that the Egyptians afflicted and they were punished, that's good for you. That's good because it shows that there's justice in the world. That's a very big issue. So the manifestation of divine justice, and that is that not only were the Jews saved, but that the people who afflicted them were punished. So the fact that the wicked people are punished is a very, very important. Now, we're two things. First of all, it's personally different for us because it's very important to restore the dignity of the victim. That it makes a difference, obviously. If a person has been victimized and God avenges his pain, his suffering, that's very, very significant. It's very, very important. It helps a person on every level, psychologically, because he's diminished psychologically when he's a victim. And it raises all kinds of issues that he's not important or God abandoned him and things of that sort. So when there's a price to be paid for what has been visited upon him, so that's personally important to them. Aside from the fact that it reinforces the whole idea of Schar V'Onesh. So that was then that's why we have to give thanks for that, because we're acknowledging that it didn't have to be that way. It didn't have to be that way because we don't know when and how God that's brings up the whole issue of divine justice. Very often we don't see it, but that doesn't mean that we don't believe in it. It's just that we're not privileged to witness it. We don't know how it works. The whole issue of Tzadik V'Ra'lo, Rasha V'Tovlo, and so forth. The whole issue of that the righteous suffer or the wicked prosper. So the fact of the matter is that when we do see an instance of the punishment of the wicked, so that's a good thing. So that's the Shvatim. Now, having said that, what is the point then of the second one? Then we're saying had God enacted judgments against them, but had not enacted judgments against their idols, Dayenu, it would have been enough for us. So this is very, very challenging. Well, what are we talking about? We're talking about something which is not really played up. It's interesting. I've had reference to that it does say, well, that God tells Moshe when he prepares him that for the 10th plague, the firstborn, uvachol Elohei Mitzrayim eser shvatim. And God says that he will enact judgments against all the gods of Egypt. And then later on it says that, in Bamidbar it says that when the Jews left and the Egyptians were burying their dead, and all of the gods, God had enacted judgments against. It brings the two together. Conveys the sense that it almost appears like they were burying their gods or something. And that's all part of one Makkah. Makkas Bechoros. So why is that so important? That's very, very important. Because it's another thing that we learn from there. The design of the Hashgacha. That is to defeat the Egyptians. It wasn't just to defeat the Egyptians, but really to defeat the underlying system, to destroy the underlying system, which is considered to be the greatest evil, the idolatrous system that people live by. Ultimately, that's what Paro subscribed to. He refused to submit himself to the will of Hashem. So that's a great, great thing that we learn from that. That, first of all, to the extent that the Jews participated in the, became caught up in the idolatry of Mitzrayim. So that's very important. It's a reinforcement of the evil of idolatry, and that the purpose of the Torah is to obliterate idolatry. So the fact that on that night, when God enacted judgments against the Egyptians, so he destroyed the idols, that's something of tremendous gratitude. We're very, very happy about that. Okay. Now, the next one is, we say that had God enacted judgments against the idols, but had not killed the Bechor, the firstborn, it would have been enough for us. Again, the problem is that this seems superficially that we're kind of happy that God killed their firstborn. The killing of the firstborn is a very specific dimension of the punishment. Because what it did was to... It teaches us a great deal. There's a great deal that we can learn. It's not that God wanted to do this, quote-unquote. It's a result of the fact that the Egyptians were given every opportunity. I think it has tremendous importance in terms of cultivating the fear of God, that they had plenty of opportunities to learn. God manifested himself in many, many ways. There was something very unique about the firstborn. For example, we said that Anivel Malach, and that God was involved in this on that night, personally, so to speak. So it had a unique character to it, in that, I think Rabbi Chaydet said, well, we interpreted it that way, that it didn't come about through any natural forces. All the other plagues were with regard to aberrations of certain natural forces. So that there was always a certain amount of room for a person to deny and say that it's just an aberration. The animals, the locust, whatever it was. But and Moshe just happened to know about it. But this is something which was direct, could not be attributed to any particular cause in nature. Because how could it just go, you know, skip over, I'll skip over. This house, there's only one common denominator, and that is the one who's the firstborn. So whether it be the in the house of Paro, or whether it be in the in the prison, the prisoner, the captive, whoever it is. So that's something which is a different level of manifestation, that God reveals himself, first of all, in terms of the revelation, in a glaring way like that. The next element is the terror. The terror that was inflicted upon them. That was the night of terror. The scream. That too is very, very beneficial to us. Because it teaches us to fear God. It's a beneficial thing for a person. Because fear of God is extremely important. And very often, people keep going and going, and there's nothing to stop them. God doesn't always manifest himself that way. Very often a person, God will leave him alone, and he just keeps going, and he's content with his way. Nothing there to instill some fear. So the killing of the firstborn is a different, unique type of a manifestation of God's control, that God is the supreme being and there's no limitation. It indicates that there's no limitation to what he can do in this world. That is, he's not limited only to those things that he can, in terms of the natural forces, he can manipulate the natural forces. That was the special element. There was no escape. Nobody could escape. V'ein miyodi matzil. There's nothing that could save you from God's hands. Even in the other, for example, the barad, the hail, so the one who feared God would bring in his animals. It was limited. Everything was limited. This was a different manifestation. And that's a tremendous, yeah, it reaffirms the idea of Hashem being the creator, and that he created Yesh Me'ayin, and that he maintains absolute control, and that one should fear God, the extent that one should fear God. So that's the special characteristics of that particular plague. Now we go on to the next one. Ilu Haragas B'choreim, had God merely killed their firstborn, V'lo nasan lanu es mamonam, and he had not given us their money, dayenu. Is this a reference to the, it's interesting, one of the Mefarshim says it's a reference to the money that they got at the splitting of the Red Sea, when all the whatever wealth the Egyptians had brought with them spilled up onto the shore. I don't know why it can't be a reference to the money that they got from the Egyptians, that they lent them their jewelry and clothing. I'm not sure why. He says that the reason is because God had promised that to Abraham. And afterwards they'll go out berchush gadol, with great substance. See, the berchush gadol is very important on many levels. That when Hashem provides a Yeshua, the Yeshua is complete. It's got to be a complete salvation. And indeed, I mean, part of that's what he's communicating to Abraham, that the enslavement is not to destroy, but it's a necessary means towards becoming a specific kind of a nation. There's many different aspects to the rechush, to the wealth. First of all, psychologically, that is that the Jews went, see, I maintain it's a reference to the money they got in Egypt as well, because that's very important, because the way they went about it was that they asked for it and the Egyptians gave it to them. So that's very important that they experienced that the attitude of the Egyptians towards them had changed, and as opposed, instead of being looked down upon, which is a very, very significant thing. That's something that is very important in Jewish life. That Jewish, many Jews suffer from that sense of being despised. It bothers them. And that's why there's such a powerful need to get the approval of the Gentile. And many Jews have to fight against that. But here, they experienced a change. It had to do with the change in the attitude towards Moshe. Because that's where the pasuk says that God had placed the chain of the people in the eyes of Gama Ish Moshe. The man Moshe was very, very great in the eyes of the servants of Paro. That's very important because I think it has an additional. What caused the change? What was the... Again, it's counterintuitive. You'd think that they disliked him because he was coming to interfere with their enslavement. But to the contrary. But it's not just that he was opposed, but he stood for the true idea of Hashem. That's the role of the Jew. That is that when the Jews teach mankind the correct ideas, they don't back away from those ideas. So while it appears that people are going to hate us for that, but really to the contrary, they have respect. That's a very big point. It's only when the Jews are afraid of the opinion of mankind that they begin to deviate. That's when they have problems. So the money is important on a number of levels. It's because, see, there's a difference when I just use the example. It's not enough to merely free somebody from a bad situation, but you got to give them the means, some type of a means, so that he can have a base to be able to thrive in the new situation. Like a lot of times prisoners get released from prison. And then they try to make a go of it, but they don't have the right skills, so they go right back to crime. Now, it's important that a person have a material base in order to be able to get off to a good start. That's always the case when people first get married, so everybody gives them gifts, so they have a foundation. So that's the two ideas. There's the transformation, that it, instead of being slaves, despised, to the contrary, the Egyptians looked up to them. Then you have the restoration, that which was taken away, the person's money is restored. That's very, very important. That also is in terms of a sense of justice, that it would be lacking in the justice of the whole situation, that God intervened, but God didn't retrieve their money. So also, of course, there's the practical benefit. So there's a number of benefits. And that's why that's singled out. But we're saying that it didn't have to be that way. Let's go further. Then it says, had God given us their money and not split the sea for us, it would have been enough. Now, here's where a very strong question should arise. See, this is a problem at first glance. This stands out. What do you mean, had God not done it? If God hadn't done it, what would have happened? We'd be dead. So how can you say, had God not done it, like it's a luxury? Well, the whole idea of all the other Dayenus, basically, is that these are additions. That it would have been enough if God just taken us out. But if God didn't split the sea for us, then it would have wiped out all the other goods. Then God wouldn't have even taken us out. What's the good of taking us out if we're going to die in the a week later when they chase after us? Isn't that something that had to be done? Otherwise, you don't have anything. So what's the pshat over here? So the I have a pshat here from the Rashbam, who says that that's not what it means. But this is a good point to bring up, a good question to raise, because here it's just a question of establishing what it means. That is to say, it doesn't mean that God not split the sea and allowed us to be killed by the Egyptians, it would still be enough for us. That's not what he's saying. The point is, he's saying that had God could have saved us, of course, God had to save us, because if God didn't save us, then there wouldn't have been an exodus altogether. So we're not really It's saying, just thanking God for saving us, but this specific way. That's what the Rashbam says. He says that God, he could have led us a different way. That it wasn't necessary, there was nothing that determined that it had to be with the splitting of the sea. The splitting of the sea is a tremendous miracle. God utilized this as an opportunity to allow us to experience that miracle. That is that we were in the grips. Everyone is different. This is something which they hadn't experienced before. Witnessing the 10 plagues is one thing. But being in this kind of a position where you are the victim and they're chasing after you and you're about to be destroyed, and then the miracle in that context is completely different. So the splitting of the sea, which is one of the greatest of the miracles, you see, because it led to the singing of Shira and all of that, that was unique. So a person has to be able to be cognizant, to study the particularities. And that's what he's saying. So God could have saved us in other ways, and we would never have witnessed that. Now, what does it mean, had God split the sea for us, but had not brought us over on dry land? It still would have been enough for us. Again, you have the same question. Well, what do you mean? That's part of the miracle. Had God not brought us over, so then what would have happened? Well, what do you mean? Then we would have drowned too? How can you say that? Then you have the same question I asked before. The answer is that, and this is the Avudram says, that had God, that is to say that God led us over on completely dry land. It didn't have to be that way. Could have been that we would have been saved and we would have traversed on muddy. It could have been muddy. But no, the land that we traversed was absolutely dry land. Now the question is, why is that so significant? All right, fine. So you didn't get your clothes dirty, muddy. But why is that so important? What's the significance of that? It's interesting in many ways. That is, you see how people are. Every aspect of the miracle is important. That is, the more specific it is that the events that are happening are not fortunate, fortuitous. That's a further proof, further clarification, that it was miraculous. It wasn't just fortuitous. And also, it is interesting, you wouldn't think that a person would even notice it. But I think this has a little to do with the nature of people. That small things, the fact, you're saying, well, I was saying, well, what difference would a person, would it matter to a person? Who cares? I mean, I'm being saved. Does it matter to me? Yeah, apparently it does. Now, it doesn't mean if the Jews had to cross over on more muddy terrain, I don't think they would have complained. No one would have complained, and would have been people would have said, "You're crazy. What do you? God saved us. Who cares? So we got muddy. So what?" Yeah, at that moment, the person would be thrilled. But nevertheless, I think it does register. A person notices the difference. The fact, these small kinds of things, the dignity of a person, that he was, when Hashem saved him, Hashem was cognizant of the dignity of the people. That with a certain ease, with a certain pleasantness, with a certain respect, there's a way in which you're transported. You could be, you know, if a person's in danger, he'll take anything, a cattle car, a ride out of the... doesn't matter to him. It could be filled with dung, but it does make a difference. If you see in the case of Yosef, when he was brought down to Mitzrayim, so who would care that it was these spices, pleasant spices? But the Torah makes a point that it's important. I think Roy Chait said that the shows you how fragile the psyche. If everything he'd gone through, in terms of the way the brothers treated him and all of that, so then it tells you that the Rashi says that for that tzaddik, the caravan was pleasant. Even though, why is that important? Because sometimes a person is in such a state that one little thing can push him over the line. Well, to the contrary, one pleasant... It's an interesting teaching. You see how much you learn from this. That sometimes it happens to people that they're really down and out. And they're in a bad mood, or in a sense they're experiencing a certain kind of a despair. And they may experience one pleasant thing. They may go out really in a bad mood and depressed and anxious about certain things. And they, for whatever reason, they go out for a walk. And one pleasant thing, maybe they'll hear a song from someone's radio that cheers them up. Or they just happen to bump into someone who's very cheerful, gives them a nice smile, a hello. Now, it doesn't change the overall situation. But the mood changes. And then a person, okay, they can go on, whatever, put things in perspective. It's interesting how even a small thing like that can make a difference. I'm not going into all the psychological reasons. Sometimes you just go into a store and the person behind the desk is very cheerful or has a nice way. It just lifts your spirits. So even a small thing like that. So this is an important thing that we learn from, that God does, that God, when he intervenes and he relates to man, does so on a level of even seemingly petty things, which have an important significance in terms of the psyche, the psychological element, that God was concerned about that, that we shouldn't have to pull ourselves through the mud in order to be saved. While objectively or consciously nobody could complain about that, but in terms of the psychological, that makes a big difference. So it says in Pirkei Avos, you should greet everybody with a sefer panim yafos, with a cheerful countenance. So apparently that's significant, that's important, that's a good midah. It's good for yourself, of course, that you should try to keep yourself in a good frame of mind, but it has to have value for somebody else. Otherwise, there'd be no point in doing it. Then, Ilu, have you run a besocha becharava? Velo shikat zareinu besocho, dayenu. Had God not drowned them, our enemies, then that would have been enough. So, what's the issue? What do you mean, had God not drowned? What would have happened to them? What do you mean, God not drowned them? Well, as opposed to what? They were coming to kill us. Of course they had to be drowned. Yeah, the Rashbam says it means that God wouldn't have drowned the Egyptians, but rather the Jews would have passed over and the Egyptians would have returned to Egypt. Because it wasn't essential then that they, to save the Jews, that the Egyptians would die. Because the Egyptians weren't prepared to cross the sea. They assumed they'd catch the Jews and toss the Jews into the sea. So once the waters split and the Jews went through, so then God could have restored the waters and the Egyptians would have been stranded. There was nothing more they could have done. The Jews would have had escaped. So nevertheless, God arranged it so that the Egyptians were drowned. That's what we're giving praise for. Now, what's so great about that? It's another manifestation of the divine justice. See, it would have been lacking. It would have been lacking to us that the Egyptians, it's important that the Egyptians get their just deserts. That is that they deserve to die because they chased after the Jews to kill them, especially after all they had witnessed. And even though Paro is the one that summoned them, they should have opposed him. They should have refused to go. So for that, they were deserving of destruction. But the way it came about is that God gave us the privilege of seeing their destruction. So that's a tremendous privilege. Person, all these principles that we need to know, that we shouldn't be amazed or astounded when the wicked people flourish and all of that, and we say that they'll be torn down, they will not be successful. That's one thing to know in the abstract. It's another thing to actually have the opportunity to observe it in action. And it has a secondary benefit, as we said, that because these were their tormentors and these were the mighty people that induced that fear. Indeed, you see that was the main element in the Shira. It says, "Vayayisol Tzrayim Mesal Tzfasayam," that the Jews saw Egypt dead on the shores of the sea. "Vayaminu Bar Hashem Moshe Avdo." So this was a tremendously significant experience. Not the general idea of Shvatim that they had seen in Egypt, but that was against Egypt per se. But to see these mighty warriors defeated in battle and reduced to nothing, like being tossed up and down, and to be able to see their complete weakness and helplessness was a tremendous benefit, a teaching experience to the Jews to recognize that the only power is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it led to a new recognition of the greatness of Hashem. Vayaminu Bar Hashem of Moshe Avdo. All this was a direct result of witnessing the destruction of the Egyptian warriors. Now the next one, we're going on to a new subject now. So you have the punishment of Egypt. You have the fact that God restores not just our freedom, but also the financial substance. Then you have the miracle of the splitting of the Red Sea. And then you have, it seems to be going on to a new subject now, the wilderness experience. That is that God provided for our needs in the Midbar for 40 years. Again, of course, you can ask the basic question, well, given that we were going to be in the Midbar, how could we have survived? Of course God had to do that. That's not an extra, isn't it? That is, my premise is that the Dayan was not talking about absolute essentials. Because we're not giving an extra praise for something which had to be that way. Otherwise you wouldn't have the Exodus. So isn't it true that God had to provide us with our needs for 40 years? A person can't survive in the wilderness without provision. And that's one of the great miracles. But as we've already gotten familiar, this is the Avudraham, we're not saying that. We're not saying that the praise here is not that had you not done so, we would have died in the wilderness. That's not the praise. But he's saying it was in their power. There was other ways to purchase. There were people that lived in the wilderness and they could have purchased. Indeed, they had the money. Indeed, they had animals. They had a lot of money. Moshe Mammon Rav Hayolahem. Mibizas Mitzrayim. They had a lot of money. From the two sources, what they took from Egypt and what they, the booty at the sea. Or they could have slaughtered their own animals and eaten. It means that even though the Jews could have gotten by, they would have been able to get by. But it means the quality of the experience. It's true. It's different. Even if you can pay for something, but then you have the burden. So I don't know what they would have done. Then they would have to send delegations and purchase things and so on and so forth. We don't know. But it means that the entire burden would have been upon them. And even if you, sometimes you have money, but it doesn't always mean that you can get what you need. It depends on what's available and what you can purchase and so on and so forth. So it's kind of like Yosef, when Yosef told the brother, Anochi akalkel eschem, I'll sustain you, I'll provide you with your sustenance. So that's a additional benefit that you could be brought, you can given rights to live in a place and all that, but you have to earn your own way and provide yourself and so forth. Well, as opposed, you go to as a guest and, you know, you live at the king's table. It says by David, certain people that lived at his table. Means you don't have the burden anymore. You don't have to worry about it. Someone else is doing it for you. Someone like a child, he doesn't have to worry about the house, the rent, the food, set table. So that is a another dimension of God's kindness to us. Now, of course, it's not just that it's a kindness, but there's a reason. This gives us the opportunity to use all of our energy to study Torah. Undoubtedly, that was the reason for it, because it was new and they were just getting the Torah and the mitzvot and so forth. So this was a tremendous opportunity to elevate themselves. So that's something that didn't have to be that way. Could have been that we would have had the responsibility and then we would still have to learn Torah, but we would have to work it out in spite of all the distractions. But that's the that's what it's saying, that God created a tremendous opportunity for us in the Midbar. Now, the Midbar could be a tremendous opportunity because you don't have all the ordinary distractions of civilization. However, you have, the Midbar has its own issues, its own problems, but God put you in the Midbar, separated you from all of the distractions, and gave you what you needed so you shouldn't have to have the burdens. That's like